From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, a brief history of time and subliminal mind control. Get ready for that. Here's what's happening. Dead Boston bombing suspect Temelyan Tsarnaev and another man who was killed by the FBI on Wednesday apparently murdered three people in Massachusetts after a drug deal went wrong in 2011. That according to law enforcement. Sources say that what began as a drug ripoff ended in a triple homicide when Tsarnaev and his friend Ibrahim Todashev realized that their victims would later be able to identify them. Todashev was killed by a federal agent while giving a statement on his role in Orlando, Florida. The man who was shot, 27 years old, apparently attacked an agent with a knife while confessing to the three-year-old slain. He was not suspected of having played any role in the bombing that killed three people and injured scores more in Boston in April, but he did confess to being involved in the brutal Boston area slain 2 years ago, according to investigators. A bizarre story in the United Kingdom. A man has been killed, a British soldier, by a machete attack and two suspects shot and wounded by police near London. The police say that the murder inquiry was being led by its counterterrorism commander. They think that this was indeed a terrorist attack by radicals. They literally, after they shot and killed a man, they beheaded him right in front of a crowd. North Korea fired a short-range missile into the Sea of Japan on Sunday. But on Saturday, North Korea launched three short-range guided missiles into the sea, also known as the East Sea, off the Korean Peninsula. Why are they doing this? Let's check in with William Forschin, author of One Second After. What's going on here, William? You know, we've been concerned about electromagnetic pulse attacks. Are they gearing up for something?
Of course they are, George, and it's a pleasure to be with you again. They're just ratcheting it up, and we are not reacting. We are not sending a clear message back of you can push a limit so far and we're going to stop. So this is like a kid that just keeps poking you in the eye and you're not reacting. What is the encouragement for? Poke me in the eye again.
It's pretty dangerous if this continues.
It's extremely dangerous because we have a rogue dictator there who could very well go over the edge and decide to hit us with an EMP assault. All you need is one weapon mounted on an intercontinental ballistic missile, and an EMP strike would blow down a significant portion of the United States power grid. And George, related to that, just within the last hour, I don't know if you've caught the news, we're in the middle of a major solar event at the moment.
We sure are, and that means the possibility of X flares.
Right now, we're at an S3 level. I have not seen that in over a year. For a solar radiation storm, which can, in fact, create a situation quite similar to a post-EMP event.
Are you more concerned about something from the sun as opposed to some rogue nation?
Well, George, that's sort of like asking, do you want to be shot on the left side or the right side?
Yeah.
I'm concerned about both.
All right, thanks.
We're ill-prepared for both.
William's book, One Second After, it's about an EMP attack and also the possibility of some kind of a solar flare from the sun. He has taken it to Congress. So far, not a lot of people are listening. They should. Mark my word, one day something like that could happen. Middle East unrest continues and increases the chance of a surprise attack on Israel, according to the head of its Air Force, but he added that he did not see an attack as imminent yet. In Oklahoma, with everyone missing now accounted for from this week's deadly tornado, the long and difficult work of recovery can begin. At least 24 people, including 10 children, were killed in Monday's monster tornado. Another 353 people injured. The twister ripped through 17 miles of central Oklahoma, pummeled 2,400 homes. The hardest hit city, of course, and you've seen video of that, Moore, Oklahoma. Nick Begich, author, of course, of Angels Don't Play This Harp, about the array, the harp up there in Alaska. Nick, a lot of people have emailed me since this tornado saying that we should be looking at HAARP as a possibility. I don't know, but I want to check in with you on that. What do you think?
Well, there's, you know, a couple things. When you go back to Dr. Eastland's work on tornado mitigation, which he actually did for the European Space Agency, and then he also did some work for NASA and FEMA on the same thing. And he was developing technologies utilizing the HAARP system and other systems for actually knocking out tornadoes. The problem is when you look at a tornado formation, it's a cold front coming up against a warm front. And when that happens, you get the shearing action that creates a twister. And with systems like HAARP, you can literally heat up the cold front and thereby dissipating the possibility of that shearing action occurring. However, being able to be that precise and precision with an instrument like this is really not possible right now. So what happens, potentially can happen, is you could run it the other direction. In other words, you end up heating the already heated area, mm-hmm. the heated air, creating a bigger differential, more extreme condition, and maybe what would have been a class one becomes all of a sudden an F4, you know, something much more powerful.
So they may be doing this unintentionally.
Absolutely. And certainly the technology is there. And before Eastland passed away in 2007, he had revised his calculations and suggested that you could create weather anomalies with 1,600 times less energy than he did in his original patents. And that he did when he was doing work for the University of Pennsylvania. So it's certainly possible. And the fact that we have this technology today, the reason that these issues get raised is because we can do this stuff.
All right, Nick, thank you so much. The websites, by the way, of all our news guests, you'll find on our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. Let's hear it for Tesla Motors. Why? Because they have announced they have repaid a $465 million loan from the government, from us, nearly a decade before it was even scheduled to be paid off. The electric car maker received the loan from the Department of Energy in January of 2010. Tesla reported its first quarterly profit earlier this month, and Consumer Reports came out with a review calling the Tesla Model S the best car it ever tested. Those two facts, along with a significant short squeeze of its stock, help send the stock soaring to record highs. But they've paid off that note very early. Twitter has unveiled technology to boost its security for its users following a spate of attacks on accounts of prominent media outlets, including the Associated Press, the Financial Times, and the Onion, the microblogging site, which transmits 400 million messages a day, said it had begun rolling out an optional login verification service to stop hackers seeking to hijack accounts with stolen passwords. And think that a secure password and erasing your phone's memory will protect sensitive information on your smartphone? Think again. Smartphone forensics experts can retrieve just about anything from any phone. Police will often seize and analyze phones for evidence of things such as indecent photos, videos, text messages, what calls were placed to whom and when, browser history, calendar events, and explanations of even murder or suicides. All of that can be uncovered whether or not a user deleted it from their phone. Expert on the internet, Lauren Weinstein, with us. How do they do that, Lauren, if you deleted it?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of different vectors for this. When you're speaking of call records, for example, when calls are made, where you've called, in many cases, the contents of SMS or MMS messages, text messages or multimedia messages, those can actually be held by the carrier. They can often hold those in archives. So in that case, it doesn't even matter. You could smash the phone with a hammer, and if law enforcement wanted access to it, if those archives existed and they went to the carriers with the appropriate legal justification, they'd be able to get at it. Now, in terms of the phones themselves, this has turned into a very, very controversial area, because what happens is that the memory, putting it in simplest terms, the memory systems in these phones are very, very complicated and multi-layered. A lot of information is cached on them. When you delete files, that doesn't necessarily mean they're really deleted. They may still be held in a mirrored memory. They may still just be flagged in different ways. And while it can take specialized equipment to get at it, and there's a company called Cellebrite that's one of the leaders in this, and they have a whole range of equipment that they sell to law enforcement, and you can buy some of it on eBay even. It will let law enforcement dig down into these cache areas, these deeper memory areas, and often pull much of this material back out. Now, the real problem here isn't so much the technology itself. It's that our laws are so antiquated and so skewed that you have very few protections against this. In many states, courts have been routinely ruling that law enforcement in a stop, for example, if you're stopped for any reason or a set of reasons, they can actually take your phone and go through it without even getting a warrant. If you have a password on it, in some states that requires more legal justification. Mm-hmm. But in general, that we have a dual-pronged situation here. We have technology where much more information tends to be on these phones than you might think, even when you try to delete it, and we have laws that allow the government to gain access to that information without a warrant in a lot of situations that would really surprise people.
One day this might come back and haunt all of us, Lorne.
Yeah, well, it's a question of really trying to decide what you're going to use your smartphone for in the first place. I mean, maybe there's some things that are best not put on your phone.
We need to be smart about using the smartphone.
Exactly.
Thanks, Lorne. Lorne Weinstein. Okay, now here's one of those stories I didn't know what to do with, but it is important. It is a medical story. We all have nearly 200 different types of fungi colonizing our feet, according to scientists. I know some of you are going, ooh. Fungi live all over the human body, but their favorite spots are the heel, under toenails, between toes, according to a U.S. study. A new map of the body's fungal diversity could help combat skin conditions, according to researchers. So there you have it. I fulfilled my obligation for somebody who might have that problem. In a moment, we're going to talk about honest medicine. Get ready. Julia Chopik joins us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Julia Chopik with us again. She was with me a couple of years ago, author of Honest Medicine, creator of the award-winning blog, honestmedicine.com. When her husband became ill with a cancerous tumor, brain tumor, she became his medical advocate, began writing on topics relating to health and medicine. Julia wants to educate you about some excellent treatments that are out there that the medical profession has yet to accept. Treatments, she says, for life-threatening diseases such as MS, lupus, rheumatoid arthritis. We're going to talk with her about that this hour. We'll take your calls as well on Coast to Coast. Julia, welcome back.
Thank you, George. It's so good to be back. I'm delighted.
We had such a great response when you were on with me a couple of years ago. I hope you did, too.
Oh, George, I have to tell you, I remember I offered to answer every email I got?
Yep.
Oh, my God, bite my tongue.
You're still answering them, aren't you?
I still am. And guess what? A lot of them have become friends, of course, you know, and they've written to me. Yes, the answer is yes. You got a great response, too. I'm delighted.
I sure did. Honest medicine. Tell me about that.
Well, honest medicine was actually, it started out in a way as being an oxymoron. You know, the title of my website is Honest Medicine, My Dream for the Future. But as you said, my book, Honest Medicine, came out of my experience with my husband, who was diagnosed with a cancerous brain tumor. And what I found was that he was given 3 years to live by the doctors. And I said, oh, my goodness, you know, this was not good. He was only 40 years old. So I began to look for treatments, most of them natural, some not, you know, but all of them were outside the box treatments. And he began to outlive his prognosis by 4 years, 5 years. Finally, he was 12 years out, and then he had a recurrence of the tumor. And the doctors kept he had a wound on his head, you know, the suture line would not heal. And the doctors kept operating and operating, and a man who had walked into the surgery telling jokes, you know, just being so jaunty, ended up after 8 additional surgeries, George, surgeries just to find 2 pieces of skin on his head that would heal.
Ugh.
He ended up, I know, being bedbound, being incontinent, paralyzed. He just had involuntary movements, and he was dying. there's no way around it, because you can't go on, you know, with a suture line that won't heal on your head.
No.
And finally, I was talking with a doctor who, on behalf of a client of mine, an integrative doctor, and he said to me, have you ever heard of Silverlon? And I said, Silver who, what? And, you know, because I was grasping. And he said, well, it's a very interesting treatment. It's FDA approved for all non-healing wounds. And he said, I use it for diabetic wounds and for burns. He said, but there's no reason that it shouldn't work on a non-healing wound on the head, a non-healing suture line. So I've been a PR consultant for many years. I got all my PR skills together. And I approached the inventor of Silverlon, and I got permission to use it. You know, we got free samples of it, mm-hmm. and I got permission from the doctors in the hospital where Tim was basically dying, put it on his head. He started healing overnight. Now, I thought the doctors would be excited. And, you know, because this is a little-known secret.
Sure.
You know, that after radiation, which Tim had in 1990 when he was first diagnosed, you know, that you often do have non-healing wounds with cancer. So I thought the doctors would be excited. What do you think they said?
They weren't excited because they didn't think about it.
Not invented here, right, George?
That's right.
That's the phase. One doctor actually came up to me and he said, I don't think it was what you found. And he had the accent on you. I felt like I was being attacked, you know. And I said, well, doctor, what do you mean it wasn't what I found that helped him? What do you think it was? You know, I was very curious. And the doctor said the words that rang in my ears and made me know that I had to help other people who were in situations like I was in. The doctor said, it's vancomycin. And I said, well, doctor, vancomycin, that's the antibiotic I've been getting by IV for 6 weeks. He said, yep, vanco is like that. It kicks in.
Oh.
I said,
all of a sudden, it was that treatment that worked, right?
Yeah, he thought it was his treatment kicking in. And, you know, this percolated in my mind. For the next 3.5 years, I took care of my husband, because even though he was brain injured, bedbound, etc., he was still my husband and the love of my life. So he came home. His skin never opened up again. Silverlon really did the trick. Never opened up again. And I vowed, you know how sometimes you just have this thing going on in your head? I've got to help other people.
Oh, yeah. It becomes an obsession sometimes.
It did. It did. And first, my husband lived 3.5 more years. He was just too debilitated from the treatments, not from the tumor. I want to stress that, because it was from all those extra surgeries I just told you about.
It broke him down.
It broke him down. And when he died in 2005, for a year, I couldn't do anything except do my work for my clients, you know. But in 2006, I started my website, honestmedicine.com. And then slowly I began to say, you know, there must be other treatments out there like Silverlon that doctors just aren't telling patients about. And they have to be. I set the bar very high. I decided if I was going to write a book, it had to be a book that would just hit people between the eyes, you know, in a good way. And I set the bar high. I said, all the treatments I write about have to be time tested. They have to have been around. I set it at 25 years. And I said, they have to have loads of people who have been helped by them. And they have to be non-toxic. And you know something? They have to be effective. But there was another thing. I had gone broke, you know, finding treatments for my husband to try to help.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. Jeez.
They have to be inexpensive. And they have to help people with life-threatening diseases, life-threatening conditions. And so I researched, and guess what? I had actually heard about all the treatments that I ended up writing about, but I ended up with 3 other treatments other than Silverlon. And they are effective for, you mentioned some of the diseases, but things like epilepsy, things like liver disease, Low-dose naltrexone is wonderful for all autoimmune diseases. I don't want to say all, and I don't want to say everybody, you know, but very, very, very effective for most autoimmune diseases like MS, lupus, fibromyalgia, rheumatoid arthritis, chronic fatigue, you know. And I said, now I've got it.
All right, hold on for a second, Julia. We're going to hit the break. We'll be right back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Julia Shopik with us, author of Honest Medicine. Julia, what do you think about natural things as well, supplements and things like that?
I'm a big believer in them. As a matter of fact, even though my book is not about totally natural things, but all non-toxic.
Right.
What kept my Tim alive for so many years, I am convinced, was diet. We found a nutritionist, Jean Wallace, whose area was cancer. And Tim, who had not been on the greatest diet, started to eat wonderfully and take a lot of supplements. So, yes, I'm a big, big, big believer in supplements.
When you find things like the low-dose naltrexone, how do you ascertain, you know, this is going to work for these things? How does that work for you?
Excuse me, you mean how does low-dose naltrexone work?
Yeah.
Ah.
And then how do you find it? How do you know?
Very interesting. Low-dose naltrexone, may I give a little background?
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Low-dose naltrexone is one of the most interesting treatments that I have ever heard about. The drug naltrexone was approved in the 1980s for alcohol and drug addiction. And as such, it was a very, very, it did not work that well. But a very creative doctor named Dr. Bernard Bahari was working with the addicts in New York City. He worked in some very high places in the mayor's offices. And he found that in very low doses, this drug raised the immune system, it boosted the immune system, and it also, what he said was, it modulated the immune system. It made it so that if your immune system was overworking, it would make it so it worked better. He was using it first on people with HIV/AIDS, and he found that their AIDS did not progress. This is at very low doses, where it was non-toxic and had very few side effects.
Like the low-dose aspirin we take. I take 82 milligrams a day. It's good for
exactly.
You.
And but at low doses, this is the amazing thing, Georgia, and I wish this is when, you know, I'm glad I'm not a doctor because, that's not what I want to do. I want to be a patient advocate. But this is where I wish I understood better, because what Dr. Bahari did basically was Nobel Prize kind of material in my mind. Lots of people have said that, because figuring out that something that was so, you know, hyped people up at such a high dose, at a very teeny dose, could modulate the immune system and raise endorphin levels. And the first time he used it was a patient with multiple sclerosis, his daughter's friend. Her name was Chris Lombardi. And at that point, there were no MS drugs on the market. This was in the mid-80s. So he said, let's try this low-dose naltrexone on her. And you know what? Her MS stopped progressing. And he said, oh, my God. And then this was before the age of the internet. You know, this was when all they had was a telephone and writing letters. And the word got around that this low-dose naltrexone was helping people with MS, with lupus, with fibromyalgia, with chronic fatigue, with rheumatoid arthritis. And by the way, George, there are about 170 autoimmune diseases, and they are rising. They're on the rise, and it's estimated that 1 in 5 Americans has an autoimmune disease.
So is this a wonder drug?
You know what? It's funny. I think yes. But whenever you say that, everybody's bells and whistles go off, you know, when you use the word miracle and all of that. The thing of it is, in my book, In Honest Medicine, Dr. David Gluck, who was a friend of Dr. Bahari's, really gives the secret to it. And he says that basically it works. It doesn't work like a drug. It works by making your immune system start working.
That's
and,
right.
And
jump starts it.
Yeah. And so it's more like a supplement.
Let's take some calls here for you, Julia. Let's go to Monica in Buffalo, New York on the wild card line. Hi, Monica.
Hi.
Good to have you with us. Go ahead.
Hi, Monica. Oh, hi, Julia. George, I want to thank your staff for being excellent. If they could please pass on to you the name of the instrumental song we heard a tiny snippet of going into the first break, I would really appreciate it. Julia, I would like to ask you about candidiasis, the condition of chronic yeast overgrowth.
Yes.
Have you looked into that at all?
Well, I have to tell you that that they seem to go hand in hand. You bring up a very good point, Monica, because one of the doctors that I've had a lot of talks with named Dr. John Sullivan in Pennsylvania, who is an expert on low-dose naltrexone, says that with a lot of the autoimmune diseases, people also have a yeast problem, candidiasis. And I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly. So somehow I think there is a relationship, there are some things that go hand in hand. But more than that, I don't know. I know that there are drugs, nystatin, and other drugs that they use, and a lot of supplements with that. If you write to me at Julia at Honest Medicine and just put C2CAM in the subject line, and write to me that we spoke, and I will do some more research on that for you.
And the song, Monica, one of my favorites, Europa by Santana. Let's go to Tom in Omaha, Nebraska, wild card line. Thomas, go ahead.
Oh, hello. I'm really enjoying the show so far. And Julia, I wanted to ask you, I'm HIV positive, and I was diagnosed about 8 years ago. And I've kind of gone up and down with my with how well treatments are working and stuff. And but it's, so far, I've done only the typical stuff that Western medicine
tell you, right?
I'm sorry.
That the doctors tell you about, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and I'm always hearing whispers and hints or like stuff out there about this different stuff in other countries that supposedly is doing just wonders for other people, but then I never hear about it here or at my doctors from them. And I was just curious if there was anything that specifically that helps treat that.
Absolutely. I don't know if it will help you, but it helps. Dr. Bahari's poster child for his real interest in low-dose naltrexone was for people with HIV/AIDS, and it just worked beautifully. Their diseases did not progress. And there's a doctor named Jacqueline McCandless who has done a study. If you write to me at julia@honestmedicine.com, I'm happy to send you information on Dr. McCandless. She's done studies in Mali, Africa, using low-dose naltrexone for HIV and AIDS. And it's just, I'm so sorry that your doctors didn't know about it. I mean, this is why I go on the radio. I love being on the radio. I wouldn't, but what I mean is I feel wonderful that you were listening, and I'm hoping that I might have information that can help you. Why don't you write to me, and I can send you those studies, and then if you'd like to find a doctor who will prescribe it, the LDN patient advocates have put together a list, and it's really quite amazing.
Julia, Honest Medicine, the title of the book, of course, in your website as well. Tell me how you pick the name, because I find that to be fascinating.
I would be delighted. And I'm going to tell you the truth. I always speak the truth, okay? I have a friend. His name is Neil Levin, and he has the website Honest Nutrition. Same idea, George.
Okay.
That we want it someday to be honest. And I said to him, I said, Neil, what would you say if I took the name Honest Medicine? Because that's my dream for the future. And he said, go for it.
Yeah.
And when I was on a radio show, the very first one I was on with Dr. Ron Hoffman in New York, WOR, he said, Honest Medicine, does that mean that you think a lot of the medical profession is not honest? And I said, yep. And he said, you don't pull punches. But, I know that it's not yet all honest. But the treatments that I write about, I feel are honest medicine. I always say, I was going to have the subtitle be treatments that would be the standard of care if Big Pharma didn't rule.
Okay, next up, we go to Mary in San Antonio, Texas, first-time caller. Hi, Mary.
Hi, George, how are you?
Okay.
Hi, Julia.
Thanks. Hi, Mary, how are you?
Okay, I'm sorry to hear about your husband, but my mom also was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and they gave her like 2.5 years, but she only lasted 5 months.
Oh, God.
And the cancer didn't kill her. It was the chemo and the radiation. I mean, she aged like 40 years in a few months.
Mary, I hate to tell you this, but one of the chapters in my book, In Honest Medicine, talks of a gentleman who had pancreatic cancer for 9 years, thanks to one of the treatments in my book, to intravenous alpha lipoic acid. I wish the doctors would know about these treatments, because you're right.
The thing is, I'm upset at the doctors because they knew she was inoperable. They knew that she was not going to get any better. And because they knew that we were looking for some hope, they made a lot of money off of her, knowing that. But I really have a question for you.
Okay.
I have a chronic spine problem. I got hurt at work, and I did have some spinal surgery, but thank God I was able to get an implanted pain medication pump, and I'm doing better. But
okay.
I'm 53 years old. I have hypothyroid, menopause, osteoporosis, and severe vitamin D deficiency. But the worst thing is severe fatigue. And I do not want to go to my doctor because all she wants to do is give me Premarin. That doesn't help. I have cancer in my family on both sides, breast cancer, all kinds of cancer. So I'm trying to find a natural alternative.
Do you know of the work of Mary Showman, Mary? She's written.
I think I do.
I say so, M-O-N. She's not only a good friend of mine, but she's the expert on hypothyroid. And, you know, if you want, write to me at Julia at Honest Medicine. I'll give you links to her websites and to her books.
That I've been suffering and suffering.
Do you also have Hashimoto's? You might.
That's the thyroid equivalent
of autoimmune.
My doctor doesn't even want to try anything. It's like they don't go into any kind of, alternative or, you know, any kind of natural type of medication. They won't try anything.
I know. And by the way, if you have Hashimoto's, there are lots of patients with Hashimoto's. That's hypothyroid, you know, the autoimmune function of it. A lot of people, there's actually a Facebook group for people with thyroid disease. Send me an email and I'll give you a link to that also.
Boy, you're going to get these emails again, Julia.
What?
These
oh,
emails
dear?
Are going to roll in for you.
You know what? My God's work is helping people
Good
to
for
find
you.
Treatments their doctors won't tell them about.
Let's go out to North Carolina. Lonnie's with us. Hey, Lonnie, go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Julia.
Hi, Lonnie.
I wanted to mention two things. First, George, I have a little cure for your fungus problem at like athlete's feet.
I don't have it.
Well, I mean, for
not my problem. I know what you mean. Rhetorical. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's the 3% stabilized hydrogen peroxide.
That works a lot on everything.
Yes, and the question I have for Julie is: there's food grade hydrogen peroxide, and doctors do H2O therapy and OT therapy. And from a book I read, it's a virtual cure for any degenerative disease. Have you heard about that?
No. If all of these treatments were put together that were inexpensive, do you know what I mean? Like the ones I write about and others have written about hydrogen peroxide, you know, in the same way. Wouldn't that be wonderful if we had one place where you could go for these inexpensive, non-toxic, effective treatments? But, yes, I have heard about hydrogen peroxide food grade being used.
Yeah, the problem I have is finding a doctor who will even look into it.
No. Have you checked with ACAM, which is a group of holistic doctors, and there's also the holistic. There are several holistic doctor groups. I know, George. I shouldn't be giving that thing right to me, but I would love to help you if I can.
How do you spell that?
It's Julia, J-U-L-I-A, at honestmedicine.com.
The ACAM, where you were mentioning? Or?
Oh, ACAM is A-C-A-M .org.
.org? Okay, great. Hey, good luck to you. Next up, we go to Pueblo, Colorado. It's John Stern. Hey, John, thanks for calling.
How are you guys tonight? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Hi, John.
How are you? I've been living with an autoimmune disease that they've been diagnosed with what's called chronic autoimmune hepatitis. For some reason, my own immune system doesn't seem to like my liver. And I've been going on a roller coaster ride. I've been on immunosuppressive medicine since I was 17, and I'm going on a roller coaster ride of on and off of prednisone. I just wanted to see what your thoughts were on someone with my kind of condition. It seems like a lot of drugs that they're talking about and a lot of things people are talking about is it stimulates the immune system. It seems like that's something that I don't want to do is to stimulate my immune system, which would in turn seem to me would attack my liver even more. And I'm finding that I'm not responding so well to the immunosuppressive medicines, and they're actually wanting me to start getting in contact with a liver transplant team if it ever gets really, really bad.
You know, I have a few thoughts here when you're talking. One is, of course, low-dose naltrexone because of the autoimmune. And, of course, I want to stress that I'm not a doctor. I'm just talking to you about research. I'm a former college teacher, so I'm a research junkie. And I kind of researched a ton for my book. But another thing I'd like to mention to you is a doctor. He's one of the heroes of my book. His name is Dr. Bert Berkson. And this is another treatment that we have not mentioned. I told you I wrote about three treatments other than Silverlawn. But this one is intravenous alpha-lipoic acid. And he has saved people from having needing liver transplants. I would really, really encourage you to consult him. He's in Las Cruces, New Mexico. It's Berkson, B-E-R-K-S-O-N, Bert, B-U-R-T. Tell his office that you met me on Coast to Coast AM, Julia Shopik. He knows me well. And they'll be very honest with you about whether they can help you, and I'm hoping they can.
You're just a wealth of knowledge. You need to write book number two.
I'm working on it. Oh, God.
Good.
You know, George, though, I have to tell you, as a former English teacher, I want you to listen carefully, you know, to this tense. I love having written the book. Writing almost scares me because I know how much research I'm going to have to put in. You know?
It's a lot of work.
But yes, it is. And I'm working on now writing another book on low-dose naltrexone. But the book that the Honest Medicine talks mainly about, you know, it tells that it works for many autoimmune diseases. But the wonderful patient stories, the patient contributions are all about multiple sclerosis.
Well, I got to tell you, Julia, in my opinion, health comes first because without your personal health, you can't do anything for the people you care about.
You can't. And you are so right. And the more I can try to help people regain their health, you know, and when I don't know something, I tell, you know, I'll tell people. But I think a lot of their doctors are not telling them about some very promising treatments.
Well, that is so true. Julia, good luck. Keep in touch with us, okay?
I definitely will. And thank you, thank you, thank you. And my book is, tell people to look for my book on honestmedicine.com and amazon.com. And I'm so glad to be with you again.
You got it. Well, up next, Leonard Mlodinow joins us. Talk about two of his works, A Brief History of Time and Subliminal.